Howdy, howdy, howdy. I'm a cowboy. It's Jim Valley. We are here, and since Super Friends is no longer on TV, WWE Mania is long since forgotten. This is the best that we can do for you. It's Saturday morning wrestling. Time to put on your wrestle ruse and gather around your device for the fun that we used to have back in the day when we'd gather around and watch wrestling. Matter of fact, if you watched wrestling when you were a kid, your childhood was awesome. So thank you for joining me, you socioeconomically disadvantaged, unattractive to advertisers, audience. We certainly appreciate you being here, and we have got a show for you today. We have got live from Dallas, it's WrestleMania weekend, who's in the thick of everything. We have my pal Steve Miggs. He's on the radio here in Seattle with KISW, and he's part of the BJ and Miggs show. He is down there. He's been on Radio Row. He's been talking to everybody. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody. So he's going to be joining us live, talking about the vibe. He was also at NXT TakeOver last night. So we'll talk about that, the vibe with Nakamura and Sami Zayn and all that stuff. Jeez, what a show last night. God, that was great. Man, I loved it. You know what was great about it? There weren't ridiculous skits. There was nothing embarrassing. They didn't bring out, there were no stupid finishes as far as, you know, no one brought out a stupid weapon to use, or there was no ridiculous valet or any junk like that. It was just wrestling, and it was entertaining, and it was great, wasn't it? I mean, sure, you can talk about the stuff that wrestling fans talk about. You can talk about the work rate. You can talk about all that stuff. But really, it just came down, it was cool. It's like, I would have liked my friends to watch it. That would have been awesome. Because it wasn't embarrassing. I wasn't ashamed to be a wrestling fan. There were no Doink the Clowns. There were no Papa Shango's. You know, there was no evil twin referees. Ric Flair wasn't kissing a mannequin. It was just straight on old-timey time wrestling. And it was great. I loved it. Awesome. Loved it so much. By the way, I'm up here in the treehouse, and I'm doing this live on Periscope right now. I know the people joining me on Periscope, I don't think that you can... Hi, Periscope. I don't think that you can... You can't hear the callers or anything. I'll probably drop off Periscope here in a minute, but I just wanted to do this just for fun, because when you're like me, and you're shut in at home, and you're here in your Kaczynski shack, writing your manifestos... You know, you don't get out much. You don't get to show much. You know, all these people with Periscope showing all kinds of cool things, like Kaiju Big Battle and everything. I got nothing. I just got the treehouse up here where I do the show. There's the Ultimate Warrior, by the way, on my back wall for Periscope. But anyway, what an awesome day it was. What an awesome, awesome show it was. And I loved it. It was so cool. It was like the most amazing thing in the world. And I loved it. I just wanted it to continue, and I want it to continue. I want WWE to be this way. So we don't have to see, you know, ridiculous things happen. And yes, it's wrestling. It's always going to be ridiculous. That's just the way life works. You know, that's just the way life is. Wrestling is always going to be silly. And it's just going to be that way. Anyway, I don't know. It was just cool. I mean, sure, Nakamura and Sami Zayn was amazing. And geez, Nakamura killed it last night. But what else was cool? Like I said, it was just straight on wrestling. They didn't need anything ridiculous. And it was a show that built. Everybody had their place. Everybody had their time. Everybody had their moment. And it worked. It was just one of those things, man. You know, they didn't have to bring out some stupid gimmick. Nobody drove a snowplow to the ring or a Zamboni or any goofy things like that. It was just straight up cool. That's why I loved it. So we'll talk to Steve Miggs. He's live in Dallas. We'll also talk to the president of the Cauliflower Alley Club, and you may remember him from his tag team with Jim Brunzel, his runs in Florida and the WWF, and... a lot of different places. We're going to talk with B. Brian Blair. He's going to join us a little bit later on the show, so you can dial up and talk to B. Brian Blair. at 646-721-9828, 646-721-9828. By the way, I want to mention, thanks last week for Rhonda Shear. I know I was a little hard on you, a little hard on the wrestling nerds. And you guys did well. You guys did right by me, and I appreciate that. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Great numbers, by the way. Great interactions with Rhonda Shear. You guys have been listening a lot, and that's been great. I think Rhonda had a great time. We'll have her back on. I don't know when, but we'll have her back on before too long. And, yeah, so we'll do that, and that'll be fun. And she had a good time. That's all that matters. She wants us to get Burt Reynolds on, and I don't think I'm good enough to get Burt Reynolds on, although he is pitching that bandit car. I wonder if we could get him. Maybe right now while the bandit thing is hot, maybe we could do that. So it's WrestleMania weekend. We'll talk some WrestleMania because it is the big weekend. God, it looks like so much fun in Dallas. Dallas looks like it's a great show. It looks like it's a great time for everybody. WrestleCon, some of the pictures from WrestleCon look... Okay, WrestleCon looks depressing. I'm going to be honest. It looks a little depressing, but that's just me just saying that. It's a little depressing, but that's okay. All the other shows look amazing. It looks like everyone's having a great time. And WrestleMania could be a fun show. I don't know if it's going to be a classic WrestleMania, like a greatest of all time WrestleMania, but it's going to be a spectacle. I think it's going to kind of be like the Trump WrestleMania. What was that, 26? I think it's going to be kind of a spectacle. You know, nothing is going to be like classic, I don't think, but it's going to have your stunt bumps. It's going to have your, you know, your holy crap spots and all that stuff, but I don't think it's going to be like amazing. It's not going to be WrestleMania 17 or anything like that. And speaking of WrestleMania 17, so Pat McNeil and I, we do the Wayback Playback. If you're a Torch VIP member, you can subscribe at pwtorch.com/govip, and you can check us out. We do it live for we do it for subscribers each and every weekend. This week, we've been doing the WrestleMania 17, as a matter of fact, and talking about that. And it's sort of like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 or DVD commentary kind of a thing, which is pretty fun. So you can check us out if you go to become a VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip. And not only, I mean, you get so much audio. It's ridiculous how much audio you get, how much content you get from the Torch. You know, and right now with WrestleMania, I mean, this is really the time to do it. And it should be a lot of fun. So be sure to sign up at pwtorch.com/govip and get all the great stuff for WrestleMania. But so we can talk about a couple of things. I've had some thoughts. You know, WrestleMania, you know, the other day my wife put on my Facebook. I always worry whenever non-wrestling fans put stuff on my Facebook. I'm like, oh, God, what embarrassing wrestling thing is this going to be on my Facebook now? By the way, when I die, please don't talk about wrestling. Please, at my funeral, just don't. Just don't, please. When I'm dead, don't bring it up. It was a thing. We did it. I did the show. I did other wrestling crap. Don't bring it up. Don't put it in my obituary. Don't do any of that stuff. Anyway, so she put up a list from Thrillist. And what's that? Chris, what's his face? What's that dude's name? Anyway, he's, you know, I think he was Thrillist. It was like the top WrestleManias ranked, or all 31 WrestleManias ranked. And, of course, WrestleMania 17 was number one. And it should be. You know, I mean, it was huge buy rate, historically significant, great matches, solid show top to bottom. Why not? But here's the thing is that whoever wrote it, and this is where I'm going with this, is the thing about the Torch is, like, people who write for the Torch know what's up for the most part. I mean, sure, there's going to be a couple of people who get by the goalie, but that happens with anything. But for the most part, you're getting, you know, 99.9% of the time, you're getting super solid content. So this Thrillist person listed the number two WrestleMania of all time as WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. Now, we did that one, actually. Pat McNeil and I did that one on the Wayback Playback not too long ago. Watching that one, and then you play along with us at home. But WrestleMania 19 was a great show as far as wrestling goes. Really solid show wrestling. And, you know, it had McMahon, Hogan, and the last Austin Rock match, and Steve Austin's last legitimate match ever. And so it's historically significant. But, I mean, the buy rate wasn't great. And I don't know. It just seems like, I don't know, it's not the number two WrestleMania of all time. There was another thing I saw on Reddit. Some dude posted on Reddit he was going to review the entrances for the first match of every WrestleMania. And the first thing he wrote, of course, the first WrestleMania, we all know, nerds, it was Buddy Rose, under the mask as the Executioner. And this guy goes, lists their entrance like it mattered at the first WrestleMania. But anyway, he goes, who is that guy under the mask? Seriously, a Google check would know. And if you're going to write an article on WrestleMania, you should freaking know your wrestling. God, I'm so tired. People who don't know wrestling writing about wrestling, it drives me crazy. It drives me freaking nuts. Well, let's go to a guy who definitely knows his wrestling. He's talking to, like, everybody this week. He's on the air here in Seattle at 99.9 KISW. You can find him on Twitter at I'm Steve Miggs. Steve Miggs, where are you today in Dallas?
I am currently walking. I'm about a block away from WWE Fan Access. We're about to start our day and go check out all the insanity that's happening over at the Kate Bailey Convention Center.
So last night you were at NXT TakeOver. Describe the vibe. What an amazing show.
It was the most electric crowd that I've ever been a part of. I mean, the crowd from the minute the event started, American Alpha winning, it was already off the roof. And then the Nakamura match, like I told my buddies, you know, my buddy Kevin, and I looked at it and go, you know, honestly, if we had to go home right now, I feel like this trip was worth it. It was to be there, to witness it, the crowd was in on every single strike, every single move. And then after that's done, you're like, well, how the hell are you going to follow that? And then, you know, Bayley and Asuka put on a great match. Balor and Samoa Joe also, I mean, brought it. I think a lot of people will forget those matches just because of how epic the Nakamura match was. But and Sami Zayn, we can't leave him out. Had it not been for Sami Zayn, I don't think we would have had as awesome of a match with Nakamura. But it was, the whole place was just losing their minds. Everybody couldn't stop talking about it as we're walking out. It was just a great vibe. I think we all kind of felt the same way in that, man, we got to witness something pretty special here. And it was like a smaller venue, so it just had a cool old-school vibe to it, man. Just bare minimum lights, bare minimum stage setup, and the wrestlers just brought it every single match.
And I was talking about it. One of the things that I liked about it is that there was no stupid stuff.
No, it felt like a street fight at moments. You know, it felt like these guys were genuinely just beating the crap out of each other. There was no special, like, fancy moves. It was just a full-on battle between those two.
Well, and also there was no, you know, there was no evil referees. There was no, you know, blow-up dolls being thrown in the ring. There was nothing where you just go, God, I wasted my life watching this crap. I really liked that aspect of it.
It was incredible. It was so much fun. I can't wait to go back and watch it with the announcers and just get the vibe of how it was, you know, from watching it on the network. I think that's going to be a match that people will be talking about for quite some time.
So yesterday you were on Radio Row and you talked to a million people, it looked like. Gosh, you were so busy.
It was awesome.
Anything stick out for you with the people you talked to? What was the most memorable moment yesterday for you?
Well, I'm a huge Sasha Banks fan, so when at 6:02 in the morning, she just walks right by and sits down and wants to have a conversation. That doesn't suck. Like I told her, oh, I guess we're saving the best for first. But, you know, everybody was cool. From Apollo Crews, we had a chance to talk to him, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, The New Day, of course, hilarious. But I think when we walked away from Bray Wyatt was just phenomenal. That guy he's so charismatic. I mean, we spent a good chunk of the time not even talking about wrestling and just talking about the music of Rage Against the Machine, because he brought up some great points that he uses, like music like Rage Against the Machine, for the promos that he does that inspires him to be the character that he is. And it was cool to kind of get a little peek inside the brain of Bray Wyatt and like, you know, what he does to kind of mentally prepare for being the Bray Wyatt character.
You know, it's really interesting that in another era, Bray Wyatt would have totally just kayfabed you and pretended to be the character as opposed to, you know, kind of letting you inside and talk about his process.
You know, it's funny, like, but while he's having the conversation with us, you could tell the character is very, very closely related to who he is. He might not be as over-the-top scary guy, but the things that he's saying is pretty amazing. Like just the way that, you know, he thinks, his thought process, you could tell that bleeds over into his promos. And, you know, even like when we're talking, I'm like, geez, you know, I never even paid attention to, if you pay attention to like the lyrics of Rage Against the Machine or bands similar to that, a lot of the stuff that he's saying on the microphone, minus some of the, you know, the mystical stuff, is rooted right in that kind of a, you know, anti-authority mentality. So it was really cool to kind of see that, you know, the character and him, there are some blurred lines for sure.
Another thing that stuck out to me when I saw your pictures is Apollo Crews is much shorter than I thought.
Yeah, but he's in great shape. Like, he might be shorter, but that guy is jacked. I mean, his muscles were bursting through his dress shirt. That was pretty cool. And, you know, it was awesome, too. Afterwards, we wound up going to this dinner, and we didn't think it was a WWE function, but I didn't think any of the current roster would show up. All of a sudden, Sin Cara, Kalisto, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, Cesaro, who else was there? Jeez, Dolph Ziggler, Brie Bella. They all came in, hung out with the media, hung out with just random people, and could not be more accessible and friendly, especially Becky Lynch. That's the type of girl you'd want to go hit up a bar and just post up and just listen to her stories. She was awesome. Then we go to the NXT TakeOver. We finish that. We end up back at the bar where the restaurant where all the WrestleCons and the Ring of Honor stuff is going on at the Hyatt Regency. And it's just a who's who of WWE alums from Tommy Dreamer to Rob Van Dam to the Nasty Boys. It was ridiculous. It was fun to see them in a much more laxed environment. And Abyss, that was funny. I mean, that guy, I think he was the biggest star of the night. Everybody wanted pictures with Abyss. It was pretty cool.
Really? Why Abyss?
You know, I don't know. We were all sitting there going, wow, everyone's buying him drinks. Everyone's taking pictures with him. Maybe because he was one of the more current, you know, wrestlers that were hanging out as opposed to like the old dog. So maybe there's a certain excitement for that for some people. But yeah, I was surprised. All of us were kind of surprised by that. We just figured, okay, you know, people would be, I mean, and don't get me wrong, people were definitely surrounding Rob Van Dam and definitely surrounding guys like Tommy Dreamer. But it was cool to see how much love Abyss was getting.
So you've been to other WrestleManias before, right?
I've been to WrestleMania 19 in Seattle.
Okay, so I guess given your experience, what's the vibe like versus other events and stuff in Seattle? What are people talking about down there?
Well, I think just the grand scale that access is now. My buddy Kevin and I were just talking about how, like, back in Seattle, I remember when access was a thing, but like you didn't really think about it. Now it's such a giant monster of an event. I mean, right now we're just standing out here and it's just a sea of people coming and going. And they do it up really well. We got an opportunity after Radio Row to walk around and check out the access setup without anyone in there and walk through the Hall of Fame part. And man, it was, as a big Sting fan, it was cool to see all the Sting outfits and costumes from the Surfer days to the Crow days. That was pretty awesome to see all the stuff for WCW stuff, some of the love that they had for the Freebirds. I'd say Access is, if you ever go to a WrestleMania, take the time and make the effort to go check out Access as well. It's a wrestling fan's nirvana. But I think the big talk, without a doubt, was just NXT. Everybody wanted it. It was the hottest ticket in town just because of how small of a venue it was. Everybody was asking if you had an extra ticket. I mean, tickets were going for like $400 on StubHub. And after the fact, everybody was talking about it just because of how great the matches were.
Are you going to a Hall of Fame tonight?
No. Well, we're going to get our indie yayas off today. We're going to go after we check out Access. We're going to head on over to Ring of Honor. They've got an event happening at 2:00, which is going to be awesome. And then we might just kind of chill out for a little bit. And then we're going to WrestleCon, which is another indie show. That honestly, it's like everybody who's not wrestling in the WWE or, some are even in Ring of Honor, but they're all going to be showing up, from Rey Mysterio to a bunch of the dudes from Lucha Underground, like Drago and Pentagon Jr. So, yeah, we're going to be knee deep in some independent wrestling today before the big event tomorrow for WrestleMania.
And you're going to WrestleMania. What's the buzz on WrestleMania from people in Dallas?
You know, the Taker match, obviously. I'd say that's the big buzz. And I think a lot of people are curious of what the New Day is going to be bringing. when it comes to entrances. I think that would probably that those and the triple threat between the three ladies, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte. A lot of people talking about that as well.
We're talking with Steve Miggs from KISW here in Seattle at 99.9 KISW. Longtime wrestling fan and part of the BJ and Miggs morning show. Maybe you knew him in another life as Steve the producer, and he's down there. So is this vacation time, or are you on company time down there?
Oh, no. Technically, I mean, I never miss a day of work. I'm getting one day off from Monday to get back in time. But Friday morning, I was live on the air from Dallas, so it was pretty awesome.
What a bastard you are.
Yeah, this is our job. Like, my job is to go talk to some interesting wrestlers and go to all these awesome wrestling events, and I can count that as a way that I pay my bills. I mean, when I was younger, I never would have thought that I'd have that opportunity.
I appreciate your time. Have a great time, and I know that you're enjoying it. I can hear the excitement in your voice, and thanks for joining us live. We'll let you get to access, man.
Right on. Have fun talking to me, Brian Blair, man.
All right, thanks. Take it easy. There's Steve Miggs. Steve Miggs dialed up from 99.9 KISW. It's Jim Valley. We are live here on Saturday Morning Wrestling. If you ever enjoyed wrestling from when you were in when you were a kid. Anyway, he's having a great time. It's always fun, man, when wrestling fans get to live the dream. And look at me, I'm living the dream. Talking to you, getting up on a Saturday morning. So lucky. So lucky. Anyway, coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk to B. Brian Blair. He's the president of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Let's see if we can sneak in a couple of phone calls. And I'll see what's going on this morning. Okay, just making sure here. Well, I keep looking for B. Brian Blair on my phone, so there you go. All right, let's go to 862. You are on the line. Who's this and where are you calling from?
It's Kylan, Jim. How are you, bud?
I'm great, man. So what's on your mind today, Kylan?
Not too much. Actually, I have some questions for B. Brian Blair.
I'll put you back on hold, and you can talk to Brian Blair a little bit later on, all right?
Sure, I'm looking forward to it.
All righty, then. We'll put Kylan on hold to talk to B. Brian Blair coming up in just a couple of minutes here. Let's go to 607. 607, you are on the live cast at Jim Valley. Who's this and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Sridhar from San Jose, California, site of last year's WrestleMania.
That's right. Sorry you're not there.
Yeah, you know, last year was a pretty much a once-in-a-lifetime event. I guess they could come back here sometime in the future, but it'll be a lot of different people. In fact, one or two people have passed away since then. I met Dusty Rhodes last year. My God, he looked thin then, and that was a couple of months before he passed away. But your guest caller said, it really is nirvana for wrestling fans, fan access. The way I describe it is, it's like Disney World for adults. Adults don't get to experience many of those thrills the way kids do when they've seen so much. But when you're there with so many fans all excited, it's a very magical feeling, and meeting all these wrestlers. The lines are long, but it's worth it. It's also a lot of money, but it's worth it. And I just have one tip, a bit late for this year, but if you ever attend Fan Access, you're going to be standing in line for hours and hours. So take a foldable stool. You can get this Coleman Ramblers foldable stool on Amazon at pwtorch.com/Amazon. Hey, see what I did there? you can take that. You can stand in line and sit on a chair whenever the line stops. And people around me, you get into conversations with a lot of strangers because you're all just sitting and waiting. And everybody kept on saying, "Wow, that is smart." Fan access. If you're wondering, should I not spend the money? Just do it, and pay your $3,000 credit card bill later. I promise you'll enjoy it.
Sounds like fun. Can you do a plug for Loot Crate now while we're at it?
I would be happy to if I knew what that was.
Well, Loot Crate, it ships to 27 countries with more info on the site. Loot Crate, it's like a friend who knows you love surprises and gives you an awesome present every month. It's more than just a subscription service. It's an entire community of fans that share their experience and interact with each other around the unboxing of each month's Loot Crate. It guarantees $40 in value in every crate, sometimes a lot more. And every month there's a different theme, all curated around that theme. They've had Star Wars, Marvel, Legend of Zelda, Walking Dead, and many more. You can find out more at pwtorch.com and Loot Crate. So there you go. What match are you most looking forward to on Sunday?
I have a terrible memory, so I don't really remember much. Just Triple H against anybody does nothing for me. So let me just think out loud by the process of elimination. Do this match, nothing bad, but again, I'd have really wanted to see that as a crowning moment for Sasha. But the fact that it's a triple threat match does nothing for me. What else we got happening? AJ Styles against Chris Jericho. You know, a couple of years ago, when I was watching WrestleMania 28, CM Punk against Chris Jericho, I fell asleep during the pay-per-view. It was just too long. People complain about 3 hours of Raw being too much. That's fine with me, but 4 hours of WrestleMania, I'm actually nervous about tomorrow. I see it almost as work. Can I get through this? But I guess that will be what people are talking about at the end. I'm sure it'll be a great match. But, you know, despite what you say about evil clowns and twin referees, I love that kind of stuff. So anything that's laughing, I will gladly take. On New Day, actually, fighting the League of Nations, is that a match?
I think it's a match.
Going on? Okay.
And
yeah.
There's supposedly something big planned. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking forward to, more than anything, the special entrances, and maybe we'll have Francesca's evil sister. Xavier Woods might have a tuba and a trombone. I don't know. So anything New Day related, I'll be looking forward to. So I hope they bring out the big guns or the big trombones, whatever it is. Just wanted to say, I'm glad you mentioned at the top of the show. Mania, I don't like when people call WrestleMania Mania. For me, Mania is Saturday morning's Todd Pettengill, who was awesome. I loved him. And Wade even said he might try and get him on, or was it you? Or Wade said they should try and get him on a interview day. I'd love to see that. I could ramble on and on about WrestleMania stuff just to fill time, but I don't know. What you're whether you're trying to fill time yet or you're ready to talk to your guest caller, so you tell me if there's more to talk about or I'll just I never listen.
Look, rambling and filling time is my job, pal, and don't you forget it.
Yeah, I don't want to step on your toes.
Yeah, don't be stealing my gimmick. Hey, man, I appreciate the call. You're a great caller each and every week here on the Saturday Morning Wrestling with Jim Valley. I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk here in a couple of minutes with B. Brian Blair. You may remember him as one half of the Killer Bees, a Florida guy. And he's also the president of the Cauliflower Alley Club. And if you are a longtime wrestling fan, it's something you should check out. It's a club, and it goes back decades. And back in the day, it used to be a club that was exclusive to members with wrestlers, boxers, and actors. And you can look back, and they'd have this in L.A. every year. And, you know, you'd have Lou Thesz, and you'd have, you know, all the big-time wrestlers were a part of it, and, you know, boxers were part of it, Jersey Joe Walcott and stuff, and actors. And it's kind of morphed and pivoted in years, making it, you know, with more accessible to fans and such. But it's a great thing, and I'm going to go to it in a couple of weeks here in April in Las Vegas. And by the way, if you're going to be there, let me know. Or if you live in Vegas, let me know. We can hang out or whatever. We can do whatever, babe. But the Cauliflower Alley Club, like, for example, Dan Haggerty, Grizzly Adams from the 1970s TV show, who just recently passed away, he was a member of the Cauliflower Alley Club, sort of in the last bit of its heyday, too. But, you know, a lot of the veteran wrestlers go there, and they have banquets, the Nick Bockwinkel Baloney Blowout, and the giveaway awards. This year they're honoring Arn Anderson and Ken Patera, the High Flyers, Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzell. Trish Stratus is going to be there, I believe. I'm going to try to get some interviews and hang out and have a good time, and it should be fun. It's sort of like a smaller, more old-school version of fan access and the wrestling conventions, WrestleCons, and things like that. You know, if people there are a little older, you know, it's awesome. You know, I went in 2009, and I got to see Dick Byer, the Destroyer, and, you know, there's Red Bastien was there when I was there. I got to see Red Bastien before he passed away, which was cool. So it's a little different vibe than, say, with WrestleCons and things. You know, a little older, not as crowded. You get a little more intimate, which I enjoy, which is pretty fun. And that's pretty, so it's a good time. But, yeah. So we'll talk about the Cauliflower Alley Club. You might want to think about being a member and such. And it's something to check out. I think you should definitely check it out.
If you're like me, you've got a list of favorite websites and a list of favorite podcasts that you visit either every day or throughout the week, but there's probably not a lot of crossover between the two. However, with PW Torch Livecast, that's different. If you're a listener of this show, you should also be visiting our main website, pwtorch.com, loaded with updates covering news in more depth than you'll find anywhere else. Editorials you won't find anywhere else. Live TV coverage and pay-per-view coverage that's unmatched. And so much more on a newly redesigned, optimized, lightning-fast website. That's pwtorch.com. Check it out every day and bookmark it. No matter what device you're using, whether it's a mobile phone, a tablet, a laptop, or a desktop, there's a version that fits your screen and customized for your device. Check it out, pwtorch.com, one of the top sources of pro wrestling insider news since 1987 and online as a website since 1999. Don't miss out. Don't just listen to the live cast. In between live cast listens or while you're listening to the live cast, check out the latest headlines and exclusive articles at pwtorch.com.
All right, I believe we have the man on the line joining us now from Tampa, Florida. I just mentioned he, you know him, you love him. He's also the president, as you mentioned, of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Ladies and gentlemen, B. Brian Blair. Brian, are you there?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm right here, Big Jim. And you know something? I had to cruise on down A1A and had to stop at Hazel's Honey Hut this morning because I knew I was going to be on your show. So I picked up that quart of orange blossom special and I chugged it on down. And right now my toes are tapping, my knees are shaking, my wings are flapping and my jaws are jacking because I'm ready for some back cracking. And I'll tell you what, you know, Big Jim, I've traveled all around the world. I've been from Maine to Spain, deep down in the Ukraine, from ocean to ocean, from coast to coast. But you know something? The pro wrestling torch, it's got to be what I dig the most. So I'm on with you right now and all your listeners, and I'm ready to have at it because I heard the Iron Sheik was out there.
Very nice. B. Brian Blair, Bob on this morning.
What's happening, guys?
Hey, man, it's good to have you on the line. By the way, yeah, I got a tweet, one of the people on, one of the followers on Twitter wanted me to make sure Raymond Church wanted me to make sure this is actually B. Brian, not Jim Brunzell under a mask.
I like it. I like it. That's a great tweet. Great question. I love it. But, yeah, it's B.
Yeah,
Brian Blair.
The first thing I've always wondered about you, because I in the magazines and in Florida Championship with Eddie Graham. Where did B come from in Blair? Where did that like, you were just brought, and then suddenly I was like, well, where did the bee come from?
Well, actually, it came really from my younger siblings. They couldn't say Brian, my sister Cheryl first, my closest to me out of five. So she called me B instead of Brian, and then the other ones called me B. So my mom called me B, and she added, she called me Bieber, actually. And then one day Buddy Colt called, my mom called Buddy Colt for my first match, and she said, hey, Buddy, please don't let those guys hurt my Bieber. And he laughed real hard, and he went in and told Dusty Rhodes and Eddie Graham and Mike Graham and the guy, Steve Kern, and they started laughing, and Dusty started calling me Beeper. And so Gerald Briscoe and Dusty and a few others, Steve Kern, close friends, real close friends, call me Beeper. And other people just call me B. And other people call me names that you probably wouldn't want to hear, but that's okay. I just like to be heard.
So you were
so
the
anyway,
original
that's where
Bieber.
It came from.
You were the original Bieber before Justin.
Yes, I was. Absolutely.
But people like you, so that's completely different. So that's nice. You're actually
I'm
a Bieber.
I like people. I love people. It's political season. I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. You know, go out and vote. Do your civic duty. When so many people died and fought for, you know, the opportunity to vote and exercise that right.
You know, one of the things I did want to mention is I know that you've had a political career in your life, but you also consider you sort of like, because the Tampa is the wrestler capital, I consider you like the de facto mayor of Tampa, the de facto, like the mayor of wrestlers in the Tampa area.
Well, actually, I won the at-large county commission seat, which is more
yep.
people voted for me than voted for seven other governors in seven other states, because there's more people in Hillsborough County, Jim. And I actually beat the mayor in the final, in the general election. The sitting mayor of Tampa, Bob Buckhorn, that's who I beat.
You know how there's always these rumors that there's a town in Florida, the little people who used to be in the circus have retired to, and it's all exclusive and you can't find it, and it's this urban legend. I have this vision that there's this wrestler commune down somewhere in the Tampa area where you guys
Well, you know,
all
we
live.
Have we have the Legends Lunch every 3 months, and last month we had probably 60 wrestlers, almost 100 people there. It's just wrestlers and their guests.
Well, let me ask you. We'll get some calls, and I'm sure a lot of people want to talk about your career and everything. But let's talk about what you're doing these days. You're the president of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Up here in a couple of weeks in Las Vegas is the Cauliflower Alley reunion, the convention that they have each and every year at the Gold Coast. For fans who may not know, explain the history and the importance of the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Well, the history, Mike Mazurki started the Cauliflower Alley Club back in 1965, and it started in a restaurant they used to go to, and they'd gather together, and guys that had extra money would gather their money together and send somebody out to deliver it. And the club grew and grew and grew, and we just had our 50th anniversary last year. And the mission statement of the Cauliflower Alley Club is to help wrestlers that are in financial need, or anybody that's made a living in the wrestling industry, even a cameraman, if they fall on hard times, we're there to help them as long as they made a living in the wrestling industry. We're one of the very, very few 501c3s. Now, I'll be flying to the Gold Coast, where we're going to have our 51st anniversary reunion. Excuse me. Got to get some water. And it'll be packed. I mean, we had the fastest, largest sellout in history last year. And we've got a dynamite cast of honorees this year. But what I was going to say is we're the only 501c3, one of the only 501c3s, where nobody paid, gets their banquet ticket paid for. I pay for my own banquet ticket. I'm the president and CEO, and I pay for my own banquet ticket, my own plane ticket, my hotel, all my expenses. I get no per diem. Every dime goes to help wrestlers that have fallen on hard times. And believe me, there are people, lots and lots of people that you guys know that made millions of dollars that we've had to give a hand up. And it's been a great thing doing it. And I just commend all of our members that have joined the club. Our club is growing and growing by leaps and bounds. And when you join the club, you get newsletters that you can't get on the internet. Stories, pictures, great things from the reunions, what's coming up, what's going on. It's an awesome, awesome time. I mean, we have such a great time. Our honorees this year, just some of them, I'll name a few. You know, you got the tag team award, which I started, and I actually handpicked, and I picked Brunzell and Ganya, the High Flyers. And then you've got, you guys with me?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Okay, good. And then you've got Trish Stratus. She's winning the Iron Mike Mazurki Award, the very first woman, female, in history to do so. You've got, Ken Patera. We've got the Referee Award, James Beard. We've got Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff, and Arn Anderson getting the Luthez Award. But there's more awards. You can go to CauliflowerAlleyClub.org, CauliflowerAlleyClub.org, one word there, org. And, you know, for $25, it's a heck of an investment. And for $300, you can join for life. And that comes with some nice little perks. And it's a tax write-off.
We're talking with B. Brian Blair. Let's take a couple of calls with B. Brian Blair. Let's go to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan in New Jersey, you are on with B. Brian Blair. What's up, man?
Hello, Brian. Nice to talk to you, sir.
Kyle. How you doing, Kyle?
I'm well, sir. My first question for you is exactly how instrumental were Eddie and Mike Graham to your career as well as other wrestlers that you may know that they worked with?
I'm sorry.
He wants to know, and you're a Florida guy. You started with Eddie and Mike Graham. You know, you were trained Hiro Matsuda. Talk about
yes.
the influence that Eddie and Mike Graham had on you and on the business as a whole.
Well, they had a tremendous, that's a great question, Kyle. They had a tremendous influence on the business, and championship wrestling from Florida was probably one of the hottest territories, without a doubt, in the entire nation, in the entire world.
And all the wrestlers came through
Florida, but Eddie Graham was a tremendous booker and had a tremendous mind, and Mike Graham was... he was an overachiever, you know, because he was a smaller guy, but he was a really good wrestler, and he was very, very convincing. And unfortunately, you know, there was some bad things happened. A lot of people don't know this, but Eddie Graham's father killed himself, and Eddie Graham killed himself, and Mike killed killed himself. And he was actually, him and I were business partners, and so I'm still dealing with that. And, you know, it's a hard thing to deal with, but Mike had it.
Let me ask you this: I mean, you came up. You're you know, contemporary of Hogan and stuff. You trained Matt. Who did primarily most of your training? Was it Hiro Matsuda?
Yes, Hiro was my primary trainer, but then of course Carl Gotch. I had the Briscoe brothers, Jack and Jerry, Bob Backlund. You know, those guys were my buddy. Colt helped me a lot. He's just got a new book out, too. It's a really good book. It's called The Wrestling Archive Project by Scott Teal. And it's an amazing book. It really taught me a lot of stuff that I never knew, you know,
from early days in wrestling on up to the mid-70s. And he actually even into the early 80s. But I love wrestling so much. I always say, you know, you could take the wrestler out of the ring, but you'll never take the ring out of the wrestler. And Eddie Graham and Mike Graham are kind of that philosophy too. Mike could never get away from the business. Eddie could never get away from the business. And, you know, now I can't get away from the business, so I participate by helping others, you know, with the CAC, Cauliflower Alley Club.
Everybody's heard the story about when Hulk Hogan, about that same time, he was trained by Suda, and they broke his ankle. And that was kind of the thing in the business. It was protected, and you had to make, you know, you had to prove that you wanted it. Did you have any horror stories like that when you were trying to break into the business?
Well, no, I mean, I wrestled all my life, you know, even wrestled intramural, interstate in college, Western, Moorhead, different colleges, Eastern Kentucky. And then I wrestled through high school and junior high school. I actually won the first junior high school championship as a heavyweight. And I was only 200 pounds and wrestled a guy about 300 pounds. But anyway, they liked amateur wrestlers, guys that had sports backgrounds like Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. And it's true that Hero broke Terry's ankle. That's a very true story. And, you know, they tried to beat me up pretty good. The first couple of days, I puked both days till I couldn't puke anymore. And the third day, I rolled out of the ring, and Matsuda looked at me, and I was just gasping for air. And he's looking and looking and waiting and waiting. All of a sudden, he takes his foot, and he lifts my chin up with his foot. He looked at me, and he said, "What's the matter, boy? You no puke?" And I said, "Mr. Matsuda, I haven't eaten since the last time I puked." And he just kind of turned around. I never really saw him laugh hard until I got to know him later on in life. But he just kind of cracked a smile. And after that, he took it a little bit easier on me. Not a whole lot, but he kind of used me as the enforcer, if you will.
Now, as a guy, as a kid just reading the wrestling magazines, you know, I remember you, Florida champion, and a Florida guy, and you always seemed without any. Like I say, I was just a kid reading the magazines. I didn't know politics, I didn't know relationships or anything. But you seemed to me like a classic NWA wrestler at the time. You mentioned Backlund, you mentioned Briscoe, and you know, Mike Graham, and you know, you're kind of in that genre to me. It always surprised me that I saw you go to the WWF as opposed to stay and be an NWA guy. Was there a reason for that?
Well, I went to WWF first for Vince McMahon Sr. And they invited me, called, and I forget what territory I was in. It might have been after Dallas, where I lived with Kerry Von Erich for a year and a half. David Von Erich for a year and a half. I keep think of all the boys constantly. I just talked to Kevin. That's why I got Kevin on my mind right now. But anyway, WWF called me, and I went in there for, well, close to 10, 11 months or so. And then Vince Sr. sent me to Japan, and Junior was doing the announcing then. And then like in... right at the end of 94, I got a call from, they had done WrestleMania 1, and Terry called me, Hulkster called me, and he said, "Hey, Vince wants me to call you." Vince always liked me, Junior, because he saw me work with Orndorff. I mean, we had a match in the Kiel Auditorium. I don't know if you guys have ever saw that match, Paul and I, it's on YouTube. But Vince McMahon Jr. got up and said, "Dang, that's the best match I've ever seen, blah, 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 blah." And he was just so, made us all feel so good. And we worked our asses off, believe me. It's hard. People don't realize how hard wrestling is. I'm sure you guys do, but we don't have the camera angles. And, you know, we pop each other. And, you know, you pop each other enough to where the guy can still, you know, not be sore and wrestle the next night. I mean, you're always, you get used to being sore. It's past that. It's kind of like weightlifting. If you did it one time, you're going to be real, real sore. But the more you do it, your body gets used to it. But it still takes a pounding, and it's still difficult. But I went to WWF then when I got the call. Terry said that Vince wanted to start a tag team, a tag team division, and asked me if I heard of Jumpin' Jim Brunzel, and I said, yeah. I read about him in the magazines, like you guys were talking about. And we got together, and we met at TV in Bradford, Ontario. And George Scott, who was the booker then, came up to us and said, hey, guys, we knew we were going to be a tag team, but we had just met at TV, and we had 45 minutes before we were going to go on. And George said, you know, we need a name for you guys. Vince wants a catchy name. And I started thinking, and George is still, he says, you got about 30 minutes or so. Think of something. And we'll be thinking, too. And so anyway, I was talking to Jimmy, and we didn't have much time. We were kind of pressured, and I was thinking, boy, you know, I love the 72 Miami Dolphins. And their defense was called the Killer Bees. And so I said, how about the Killer Bees? Jimmy said, yeah, I like that. George Scott hadn't even left the room. Mr. Scott, he came back over and said, how about the Killer Bees? He goes, I like that. And it was so funny. Leapin' Lanny Poffo pulls out a pair of bee tights. And, you know, the Killer Bees were born in Brantford there, Ontario.
That's crazy. And you and Jim obviously gelled. And you mentioned that at the Cauliflower Alley Club coming up here in a couple of weeks in Las Vegas, you're going to be honoring the High Flyers, which was Jim Brunzel and Greg Gagne. How would you, let's compare and contrast. What do you think the difference is between, say, the Killer Bees and the High Flyers?
I don't know really what the difference is, other than the fact that Greg and Jim worked more in a territory, whereas Jim and I were in a part of wrestling that launched wrestling into what it is today. When we started Rock and Wrestling with Cyndi Lauper and all that stuff, and we had Mr. T as our manager. It was kind of different as far as the styles go. I think we were both kind of similar in quickness and knowing how to wrestle, because Vern's real hip on teaching the guys there how to, you know, amateur wrestle and how to incorporate that in matches. He would use Brad Rangins a lot as far as that goes. And, you know, you had a great group of guys that broke in with Jimmy, Cosro Vasari, Ric Flair, Ken Patera. You know, that there was a lot of talent in the AWA. And so by comparison, I would just say that Jimmy and I worked in front of a much larger crowds. And I know the High Flyers had great matches, and they were territory matches rather than, you know, matches where you're in 140, 160 different countries that are so widely viewed.
So this weekend is WrestleMania in Dallas. It's scheduled, or it's they've sold enough tickets to set the record for it to be the greatest attendance of all time. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because you do have that big experience with WrestleMania 3, the legendary 93,000 people, and also the big event in Toronto with 60-some thousand people. What is it like being in front of a crowd like that, and how do you tailor your wrestling when you have that massive of a crowd to be in front of?
Well, I work the same whether it's 100 or 93,000 people in attendance, but there's a huge difference as far as, you know, you want to make sure that everything's right, obviously, because not only are the people there in attendance, you got all the people watching on television as well. You know, there's a lot of adrenaline when you hear that crowd scream for you, cheer for you, yell at the bad guys, the heels, and just look up in the stands, and it's kind of a rush to know that you're in a pair of modified underwear looking at that many people, and they're looking at you, and it's crazy. I tell you, that's it's an experience that you'd have to be there to understand it.
Another thing that happened this week at WrestleMania week is they unveiled a statue of Dusty Rhodes at NXT and at the convention at Fan Access. Dusty Rhodes, obviously, another big Florida legend.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dusty Rhodes, I wined and dined with kings and queens and slept in alleys and eaten pork and beans. Dusty was a great friend, and we had a lot of fun stories together, a lot of road trips, some particularly good ones with Andre the Giant, the three of us, and we had some fabulous times together, and Dusty was always he was the biggest star probably ever in Florida. And that's saying something, because when you got guys like, you know, Jack Briscoe and Eddie Graham and the great Malenko and guys that just sold out places every night, and then here comes the Dusty Rhodes, who, you know, they did all this on wrestling primarily, you know, hardcore, stiff wrestling. People went and we believed, you know, I used to go to the Armory on Tuesday nights and there was nothing else in town but wrestling. And we'd go there and no air condition, held about 3,000 people and be sold out. And, it was awesome. I mean, it was the greatest thing since ice cream.
Very nice. Take another call for B. Brian Blair, president of the Cauliflower Alley Club, one half of the Killer Bees and Florida guy. Let's go to Boris in Chicago. Boris in Chicago, you're on with B. Brian Blair. What's going on, Boris?
How's it going, guy? Happy Saturday.
Hey. Same to you, Boris. How you doing?
Speaking of Blair here and tag teams, we had new tag team champions last night. And they actually beat, which is everybody's calling the fake Art Essence, which is so cool because, you know, they took on the persona of the Anderson, whichever ones you want to call out. They took on, you know, maybe Iron Anderson, and I'm having a brain freeze right now. But we had new tag team champions last night, and I just want your take on how. You know, the main roster has really not did a really good job of, you know, the return of tag teams. But what are your take on it, and do you think it's going to get better after WrestleMania?
Yeah, last night on the NXT. Yeah, what do you think about tag team wrestling these days, Brian?
I think it's kind of lost in its art. Like when you had guys together, like the Hart Foundation, the Rougeaus, the British Bulldogs, guys that work together every night in like a tag team division, the Demolition, you know, Haku and Ming and the Islanders and all these different tag teams that actually had names. The reason Vince broke up the tag teams like that is because he thought one person in the team could be a bigger star all the time, but he was branded still as that particular person. So he started having guys wear the tag teams, but wear different outfits, not uniform outfits like the tag teams of the 80s. So I think that the new era is kind of, he's ready for a change, and I think after WrestleMania, you'll see more and more of the guys that are the tag team division, so to speak.
How much do you think of also it is economics, paying two people to wrestle a match versus paying four people to wrestle a match?
Well, yeah, that's true. The economics is... it may be a factor, but if you're pulling your weight, with a billion-dollar company like that, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, they've got guys they're paying that are sitting at home making $35,000 a week or a month. Excuse me.
Have you been to the Performance Center, by the way? Have you made any visits? To Orlando?
In Dallas? No, in Orlando. No, I have not. I have not. And I don't know why I haven't. I'm right here in Tampa, and I've gone to Orlando a couple times. I just never went there. I don't know why, but it's definitely on my bucket list here real soon.
It'll happen one of those days. Thanks, Boris. Appreciate the call. You can dial up, talk to B. Brian Blair at 646-721-9828, or you can I'm on Twitter at Jim Valley, or you can email at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Okay, Brian, you mentioned him, your beginning promo. I'm getting emails and tweets from people. People want to know, what's the deal with you and the Iron Sheik, Khosrow? What's the deal?
Well, I think it started from when we were in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and he was trying to get cute with me and do some go behinds and stuff, and he hooked me, and I counter hooked him and double wrist locked him, and finally he kind of shot on me, so I shot back on him, and he said some words and tapped and said, quit. You hurt me. And I said, you were hurting me. And I thought he wanted to shoot. And, he was really pissed at me that day. I mean, he was really, really pissed, like he had, lost his puppy or something. And ever since that day, he was never the same to me. And knowing his mindset, that's exactly why he was peed at me.
Well, yeah, I think people who don't know, the Iron Sheik was like Brian, also a legitimate wrestler, and he probably didn't expect you to be able to take him, huh?
Exactly. He always bragged about his medal at the Pan American Games and all that. And Khosrow was a good hooker, a good shooter, and a good wrestler. And there's a difference, of course, as you guys know. And I think it just hurt his feelings. He never forgot about it. So, I mean, he rang my neck real good in that front face. He got me in a front face lock, and I just went from the front face lock and finally pulled out of the front face lock. He was fighting, and I was fighting to get out of it, and switched it into a double wrist lock, and got his arm behind him, and he was just squealing, and tapped and said, okay, and I don't know, we said a couple words together to each other and tagged out, and he kind of looked at me and stared at me after that, and he's kicking the apron, saying stuff. I don't know what he was saying, but he was definitely upset. So that's the only thing that I know that it could be.
There's a couple of questions here from email. We got an email from Brian in Arizona. He wants to know who you consider to be your greatest opponent.
Oh, without a doubt, Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful. We rocked houses like you would not believe. I remember one time Chief Jay Strongbow was watching Orndorff and I work in, we had so many matches, but it was a northern town. I don't know what town it was right now, but anyway, from the time we got into the ring for 18 minutes, however long the match was, the people never sat down. I mean, they were up, and it was so loud. It was blistering loud. It was a 12,000-seat arena. And, the idea was that, Tito Santana and I were to get Hulk over for Hogan. And, that's what we did. And that was our job, and it was a lot of fun. I went enough matches where everybody believed that I could beat Paul any day, and when he turns around and screws me, he's got that heat to carry to the big man, and that's how wrestling works.
One of the things that kind of bugs me is I feel like Paul Orndorff doesn't quite get his due in the sense that he was one of Hulk's biggest drawing opponents. He drew everywhere he went. He was a great wrestler. When his career kind of winded down from a physicality aspect, he adopted, say, the mirror in WCW and kind of showed that he could do some lighter touches with comedy. I think he's a much more well-rounded performer than people give him credit for, along with those real-life credentials. And, you know, he drew a ton of money. I feel like he should be, not that he's, I won't say, you know, he's not certainly not forgotten, but I feel like he should be more well-regarded than he is. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, him and Junkyard Dog and for Watts, you know, selling out the Superdome, the amount of tickets that Bill Watts had, 30,000 people before there was ever the big houses. Bill Watts was drawing them with Paul and Junkyard Dog, and Paul was just that kind of heel, and believe me, he was a tough guy. I've seen him beat up lots and lots of people. I mean, totally beat the shit out of him. I mean, he bit Tony Atlas's ear off. That's a pretty wild story. We were coming back from Wheeling, West Virginia, and I like Tony a lot. Don't get me wrong. He's a good guy. But at this particular time, he was in a bad mood, and he was slamming lockers, and he was saying nobody could beat me except maybe Andre the Giant, and I got to go out and do the job. God dang it! And he was cussing and slamming the doors, and then he's got shooting himself. Got a needle in one cheek and a needle in the other cheek, shooting steroids. So he had that mean attitude. No telling what his testosterone level was. But on the way back home, I was driving. Tony was next to me. Paul was behind him, and Tommy Rich was in the back. And when Paul and I first went to Mid-South, we rode with Murdoch and Cox, Dick Murdoch and Killer Carl Cox, and they pulled this bench seat all the way back on purpose for a rib and make us drive 200 miles each way or whatever the trip was with our knees facing each other because they said, he had his leg or something. He had some kind of excuse, but the whole thing was a rib. So I used to hear Paul say, Mr. Murdoch, can you pull your seat up a little? Can you pull it up? No, he couldn't do it. But we were new in the territory and couldn't say anything about it. We're riding with the top two superstars in the territory at the time. And so now we'll go back to coming back from Wheeling, West Virginia, driving back to Atlanta. And Paul said, hey, Murdoch, move that seat up. Joking. And I started laughing. I thought it was funny, because it reminded me of the old days back where I just mentioned. And Tony turned around and took real offense to that. He said, hey, don't call me Murdoch or I'm going to kick your ass. And Paul said, you ain't going to kick my ass. And Tommy Rich is going, no, guys. He didn't want to see any fights. He was real nervous. And it got louder and worse. And now, guys. Tommy Rich is going, please. And Paul said, Beeper, pull the frickin' car over right now. I can't stand this. And Tony said, yeah, pull this car over, Brian. Pull it over. So I'm looking. I said, okay, wait a minute. Let me find a good place. And Tommy said, no, Brian, no, don't do it. Don't do it. And Paul says, you better do it, Brian, or I'm going to kick your ass. And I said, okay, I'm finding a place. So I saw like it was a bowling alley, and there were some half semi trucks there without the truck on it, just the trailers. And there was a basketball court. So I said, somewhere between there, they'll find a place. And so Tony gets out of the car, and he's got cowboy boots on, jeans, and a World's T-shirt on, gym T-shirt, or Gold's gym T-shirt. And Paul gets out in a pair of tennis shoes and shorts, red shorts, and a white T-shirt. And he had a crucifix across around his neck, and he said, Beep, hold this for me. I said, okay, man, do what you need to do. And they hooked up like two bulls, boom. And all of a sudden they went to the ground and started rolling around, and I hear, ah, loud as could be, you cheated, you motherfucker. And Paul goes, poof, and a big piece of something comes out of his mouth, and it's his ear. He's going, you bit my ear off, you bit my ear off. And Tommy runs over with like he's afraid and picks up the ear. He goes, oh, my God, it's an ear. And he's crying. Now Tommy Rich has got tears in his eyes. He's crying. I can't believe this. Oh, his ear. So we took him to the hospital, sewed him up, and Tony never came back to the territory in Atlanta after that. But they made up. They're friends.
Why you would think you could fight Paul Orndorff? I mean, Tony was a body guy. I don't know why he was. I don't know. Okay, well, I guess we all have lapses in judgment, but you know things are going south when Tommy Rich is the voice of reason. That's for sure.
That's a great. That's very good. Oh, I like that. Great.
Just saying, we're talking with B. Brian Blair. We got the Cauliflower Alley Club. By the way, I'm going to be in Vegas for the Cauliflower Alley Club. Hopefully, we can get together. That should be a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely, that'd be great, Jim. I appreciate that. Yeah, look me up, and I won't be hard to find, and we'll have a diet soda.
Sounds perfect, man. Sounds perfect. Hey, somebody else wanted to know: was there anybody in your career that you wanted to wrestle that you never got a chance to, or didn't get to wrestle enough?
Golly, you know, I loved working with Bret Hart. I could work with him all day long. We had some great matches. I wish we would have had more single matches. More, I hate to say this because it might bother some people, but Chris Benoit. Him and I were friends, and you know what happened to him, I have no idea, something with the brain or something, but it's a terrible thing. Anyway, Chris was a tremendous worker, and I was in Japan with him several times, and you know, a lot of people don't know that when I left Vince, I not only did I build four successful Gold's Gyms that were sold when they weren't for sale, but I had a long independent career along with my Japanese deal. So, you know, I stayed in the business for a long time after that and enjoyed it, still enjoy it. So that's probably all I could think of right now. You know, I would have liked to work with Randy Orton or Triple H, you know, those two guys.
No, I mean, it's interesting, your career, the way it, you know, when you start, obviously in Florida, it had to be, had to have a lot of realism, had to, you know, obviously it was a territory where people with credentials, maybe with the exception of Dusty, were valuable. And it's, you know, where wrestling changed, I guess. And how did your style evolve as it went from something that was more real and more protected versus, you know, the WWF, where it was more of the sports entertainment philosophy?
Well, you kind of had to, I don't think my style really changed that much. I mean, I would incorporate a little more things into the repertoire that were a little more exciting, kind of. And, you know, it always depends. Everything in wrestling depends on who your opponent is. You know, you can be the best wrestler in the world, you know. But if you've got an opponent, it's like working with the Sheik and Volkov. You know, I love Nikolai. And, you know, both those guys, you got to pick them up and strain your back to pick them up to give them an ass bump or a suplex or a slam or whatever. It's like you give them a clothesline and Nikolai goes down in four stages. You know, first it's a knee, then it's a butt, and then it's an elbow, and then it's the other elbow before he hits his back. And, you know, it's hard to – those guys would get such great heat, super heat, but it was hard to make – you had to be really creative to make a comeback on those guys. And contrary to that, you could be with the Hart Foundation, especially Brett. You know, Anvil got the we got to learn how to work with Anvil good, and we just had some really, really good matches together. Bret Hart said he had the best tag match of his career with us in Los Angeles during the time when we had the Saturday night main event spot. And I remember that. We did the mask switch, mask confusion. So it was always great wrestling with Bret.
My memory serves me correct. Weren't you on the show in St. Louis when they did when WWF did the first Wrestling at the Chase, which was kind of the first salvo in the wrestling war? Were you there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was.
Did you know how big that was at the time?
Not really. It was just like another night. Oh, I mean, I didn't really realize how big it was.
I mean, that show just blows my mind in the sense that, you know, what it actually meant and what it turned out to be. And it just, I don't know, it's pretty amazing to me. But that's another story for another time. So can people still go to the, I think the package rooms are no longer available for Cauliflower Alley. But I think you can still get a room at the Gold Coast, and it's very reasonably priced. So if you're interested in going or you're in the area, are there still tickets available for any of the events for Cauliflower Alley that you're aware of? I guess
I think we have like 25 tickets left.
Okay. And if people have never been, it's a great event as far as it's much more intimate and much more personal than, say, if you're at WrestleMania this weekend for fan access or WrestleCon or something large. It's much more personal. And it's a much, you know, you can have some interaction with people and talk wrestling. I mean, and the fans that go to this event are as knowledgeable as any you're going to meet, and everyone's very respectful and very nice. And it's just as much fun talking to fans who are at this event as it is talking to the wrestlers. It's a really cool vibe, I think.
Well, thank you, Jim, and that's how we like it to be. And I appreciate you saying that, because that's how I felt, you know, 12 years ago when I was there. I said, wow, you know, what a great group of fans. They're all respectful. Everybody's nice. And it's good seeing all the guys, so many of the guys there, my gosh, guys that aren't even being honored come year after year after year. And now we're just getting bigger and better. And, you know, it's a real event, and people, now that they understand what the Cauliflower Alley Club does, that we are the only entity that, when the wrestlers fall on hard times, that will pick them up financially. And a lot of people, believe me, it happens to so many people. I just can't name them because we keep anonymity, and unless the person wants us to say so, you know, and then we'll definitely, you know, say something like Kamala. You know, he had his feet amputated, or Mr. Romero before he just passed, but before Ricky Romero, Jay Youngblood, Youngblood's his dad, you know, we converted a van. Because he had the diabetes too in the feet, and we converted a van so that he could drive with his hands. We do so much stuff with so many people, and every dime is accounted for. And like I said, nobody gets paid a nickel. It's just self-satisfaction. It's such gratitude, you know, when you see these people. I mean, many of them cry. They're so happy that they thought I'm going to lose my house, or these doctor bills, you know, they're bugging me so bad. My wife's going to divorce me, or she already has left him, or whatever. There's always something that somebody needs. And thank God for the good fans that join as members. It's only $25 to join for a year. Like I said, $300 for a lifetime membership. We go there and we have a raffle with some ring worn gear with some of the people that are there. You take pictures with them and stuff. So it's that's something that I started last year, and it's going to be even better this year. And it's a great thing, and I just appreciate you putting it over, Jim. And I look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, I look forward to it as well. Also, you just reminded me, I forgot, there's also the annual tradition, the belt raffle. Dave Milliken, who makes the belts for the WWE and virtually every belt you've ever seen in your life. Did the Winged Eagle belt for the WWF, did the famous Intercontinental belt. He does a belt every year for the Cauliflower Alley Club, and there's a raffle. You put in a couple of bucks and you get tickets, and they raffle it off at the end of the show at the banquet, and you can win a real live fresh brand new Dave Milliken Cauliflower Alley Club belt.
And it's so unique; it has every one of the honorees, not everyone, but as many that fit as will fit, and it still looks good. I mean, this year I know it's got Trish Stratus, Paul Orndorff, Ken Patera, Arn Anderson, and Brunzell and Gagne, the High Flyers. They're all on the belt, and it's done really nice.
By the way, if you want to follow Cauliflower Alley on Twitter, they're at CAC Reunion. So you can follow them on Twitter, CAC Reunion, and you can see what's going on with the Cauliflower Alley Club, its history, and what's going on today. A lot of cool things. Like I said, it's a fun, unique event, and it's very intimate, much more intimate experience than you're going to find. I mean, I guess the closest thing you could say is it's a bit like Charlotte, if you go to the Charlotte Fan Fest, but it's different because it's not commercial. As Brian said, it's a non-profit. Yeah, there's a few people with gimmick tables, but not everyone's trying to sell you pictures or autographs and stuff. It's a much more friendly, much more intimate experience. And like I said, it's like you'll just be standing there, you know, looking at whatever, and you'll start up a conversation with a fan, and they'll know exactly what you mean and what you're talking about. That's pretty fun. The other thing is, you know, we've seen with a lot of the generation that started the Cauliflower Alley Club, Red Bastien comes to mind, you know, that we're unfortunately losing them. And I think, Ryan, you're part of literally the next generation of Cauliflower Alley. I went in 2009, and I got one of my prized possessions is a picture with Dick Beyer, the Destroyer, which I love.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to sit there, and I'm like, oh, my God, you know, I'm in the presence of you know, a guy that did so much business in Japan, you know, a real national legend in Japan. I'm like, you know, talk about not being worthy. There's another picture I got to take with Mad Dog Vachon, you know, who could not have been nicer. You know, I mean, and everybody's, you know, Ken Patera is going to be there, and he's a character and hilarious. It's a great event, and I love it, and I would encourage people, if you've gone to Charlotte or you've gone to WrestleMania, you should go. If not this year, you should go one year and at least make a point to check it off your bucket list to go to the Cauliflower Alley Club. Gold Coast is a very nice hotel. It's very clean. It's well appointed, and it's very affordable, and it's just a fun event. I encourage everyone to go to the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Well, thanks, Jim. Yeah, I do appreciate that, and I appreciate being on the Pro Wrestling Torch with you. And anytime, just whenever. You're stuck for somebody to talk to. I mean, I enjoy, you know, reaching out to the fans out there and talking with intelligent announcers and that ask good questions. And it's my pleasure, and it's been a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, thank you. And we'd love to have you on again if there's anything you ever need to promote in the future, or if there's anybody in Tampa when you're, you know, because you are the mayor of WrestleTown in Tampa. If there's anybody else who would like to be on the show, we'd love to sit here. And that's the theme of my show. I do Saturday Morning Wrestling, so it's an old-school nostalgia podcast, so we talk about a lot of different things. Matter of fact, last week we had Rhonda Shear on from USA Up All Night, and she was talking about her experience at WrestleMania 10. And, you know, we just try to have some fun and you know, just kind of appreciate the history and the history of the business and the love of the business. I try to come at it from that standpoint.
Excellent. I mean, do a great job. And, just look on Facebook pages at Legends Lunch and pick out any of the people that are in the area, and I'll get them to do your show.
Oh, awesome, Brian. Well, I appreciate it. Well, man, is there anything else we should talk about before we let you go and enjoy what I hope is a sunny day in Florida?
It's actually raining right now, and I think I left one of my windows down, I think I better get going, so...
All right, man.
I'd love to stay and talk, but anyway, all you guys out there, keep on buzzing, and remember the CAC and the Killer Bee. Remember Pro Wrestling Torch on Saturday mornings, and golly, it's just... God bless you all. Thank you so much.
All right, there's B. Brian Blair, everybody, running out to take care of his vehicle from rainy Florida today. We actually have nicer weather in Seattle. Who knew? Well, there we go. That was tremendous. Oh, my God, was that tremendous. That was tremendous. That was great. What a great story. Paul Orndorff biting off the ear of Tony Atlas. Come on. Tremendous. Could not have been happier with that. What a great, great interview with B. Brian Blair. Tremendous. Well, I'm here. I got a couple of more minutes, so there's something else I want to talk about. WrestleMania moments. You know, as I mentioned earlier, that Thrillist article had the greatest WrestleManias, and there's a bunch of them. You know, all the listicles are out right now. But really, Vince McMahon and everybody likes to talk about WrestleMania moments, and WrestleMania is built up in moments. And one of the things that always kind of bugs me is they always talk about Mick Foley's WrestleMania moment going through that flaming table at WrestleMania 20 with Edge. And it's a cool thing, don't get me wrong, but I feel like that kind of devalues Mick Foley a little bit because his career was so much more, and he kind of maybe deserved more at WrestleMania. And I think Mick has talked about it, and he kind of thinks that's his WrestleMania moment, but I don't know. Some of my favorite WrestleMania moments, I mean, there was just the excitement of WrestleMania 1. I mean, it was such a big deal. The other thing, you know, WrestleMania 3, I remember watching that on closed circuit and just seeing all the fans there, and it was, you know, who's going to win, Hogan and Andre? And the Trump WrestleMania, WrestleMania 26, was cool because people were talking about it. And it was maybe the last major WrestleMania as far as public notification and really kind of being on the public's radar to a large extent. I mean, WrestleMania always is. I mean, it's always going to sell with the brand, you know, like this week in Dallas. And there's talk of, by the way, spoiler alert, so be ready. There's talk of a big, huge stunt that's going to happen, obviously, probably with the Shane McMahon Undertaker match. You know, and given Shane's history, he's probably going to try to top his, you know, his other falls and other things that he's done. So, I don't know, if you have any thoughts on WrestleMania moments, some of your, you know, your pinnacle WrestleMania moments. I think, you know, passing the torch to Stone Cold Steve Austin is a WrestleMania moment. To me, you know, being live at WrestleMania 19 in Seattle and seeing Rock and Austin for the last time ever. You know, that's a WrestleMania moment. And you could kind of feel that something was up, even though we didn't know something was up. The demeanor of the two, the kind of the vibe they gave off was something. You kind of feel that. But I mean, WWF talks about, you know, Vince McMahon talks about wrestling and moments and what they mean by WrestleMania moments, and obviously Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30 was amazing, and God, everything that's going on with Daniel Bryan, you're so happy that at least he had that one moment with WrestleMania. Oh, crap. Just remembered I forgot to ask Brian Blair about Jimmy Garvin, because Jimmy Garvin's going in the WWE Hall of Fame. I missed that note. Oh, well. Anyway, kids, next week on the show, we're going to have Steve Beverly, who used to write the Matt Watch newsletter. He's been on some of the old Pro Wrestling Torch radio shows, Pro Wrestling Focus radio shows with Wade Keller. And I want to talk about the evolution of wrestling and television next week. With the death recently of Joe Garagiola, people talking about wrestling at the Chase. And, you know, we used to, you know, a lot of us grew up on studio wrestling on Saturday mornings or Saturday afternoons or 6:05. And just the evolution of technology now that, you know, we can have live streaming of pro wrestling and iPay-per-view and just the evolution of wrestling and the evolution of media and the evolution that wrestling has kind of gone hand in hand with that, that it used to be first it was a national product when TV was national, and then it went to local after it was overexposed and the technology caught up where you could do local wrestling, and the finances caught up where you could do local wrestling. So we'll talk to Steve Beverly next week. Enjoy WrestleMania. I'm going to be live tweeting the Hall of Fame tonight if you want to follow me at Jim Valley. I'm so close to 1,000 followers. Can you get me over the top with 1,000 followers at Jim Valley? Can you do that for me? That'd be great. So I'll also live tweet WrestleMania, and it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the show. I don't know if it's going to be a great WrestleMania, but who cares? It's WrestleMania. Have a great time. Wallow in your wrestling fan nerddom. This is love.